This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information rather than real, practical advice? I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello, and welcome to The Real Sex Education. I'm Diggory Waite, and I'm joined, as ever, by accredited sex and relationship therapist, Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Mum, today we are talking about women's orgasms. We have spent a lot of time on the podcast recently talking about penises, penis size, early ejaculation, delayed ejaculation, a lot of penis owner stuff. Today, it's about the people who have vaginas, vulvas, clitoris.
Oh, clitoris.
Clitori? Or is it clitorises?
Do you know what?
Is it Latin?
I don't know.
Because isn't that what it's clitori if it's Latin, right?
I don't know.
So tell me, whilst I'm looking at the etymology of clitoris, what is it? Because some people might not know what it is. I was reading a book the other day that someone thought it was a Greek man.
A Greek man?
Well, the name of someone Greek. Yeah, which, funny enough, okay. Looking up the etymology, apparently it is a Greek word.
Oh, right. Okay, well, that's interesting, isn't it? And what's the plural, have you discovered?
Oh, hang on.
I mean, I can't think why you'd need a plural.
The standard plural is clitorises.
Oh, I was right.
There you go. Quite right. Well done.
No, the thing is, though, I mean, though, why you'd want to know. I'm just imagining having a jam jar with lots of them in there.
Oh, that feels like a witch would have something like that. A sexual witch. Yeah, well, for a spell.
For spells, putting them in your pot.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a pot of rat tails. I've got a little jam jar filled with clitorises, you know, and together I'll make you a love potion. No problem. Why is she from the north? I'm not sure.
I love it.
She sounds like quite a nice witch, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. Yeah, so what's it for? Well, what it is it's a pleasure organ.
Interesting. An organ for pleasure and pleasure alone.
Mm-hmm.
No other function.
That's what it does. Nope.
Wow. Interesting.
No, that's what it does. No other function.
Because, and of course, the pleasure is what we're talking about today, because women's orgasms, I think a lot of people, and we've had a few questions about this as well, I've talked about the fact that it takes them, women, a long time to orgasm, right? Mm. And I think there's that general feeling as well that women take a while to orgasm, that sort of stuff. So I think it's important to talk about the clitoris, because if that's the pleasure organ, that's the one that you need to stimulate to achieve orgasm.
Maybe we should be talking about the orgasm gap, which is that belief that women take longer to come and that there's this difficulty for women. I mean, they don't always take long time to come. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can get in the way, just like with men. You know, they can be very quick or very slow, and some days will be different than others. And a lot depends on the mood you're in, the stimulation, all kinds of things. And also, you know, it varies from not just in one woman from one moment to the next, but in different women, they have a different anatomy. And what we have to remember is that the clitoris is not just the little knob that you see on the surface. There's an awful lot going on down the sides of the vulva and deeper. So you know, the clitoral complex, all the nerve endings, inside the anterior wall of the vagina, and it's the stimulation of those that can cause what's so-called vaginal orgasms, or stimulation of that is what's supposed to make people squirt quite a lot, although also stimulation around the urethra. It's all very mysterious, and that's why you will never find a jam jar full of clitorises, because women's anatomy is not anything like as researched as men's.
Yes, that is what's really interesting about this. When I was looking up this stuff online, almost every piece of research and stuff was always had the caveat of, but there's not enough research to fully support this claim, or there's not enough this, that and the other.
Oh, and there's been so much nonsense, absolute nonsense talked. I mean, it's really, that's been disproved easily.
But the one thing I would say is there is research that is mentioned in a couple of books that I've been reading, one called Sex Therapy, The Basics by Kate Campbell, and the other one called The Relate Guide to Sex and Intimacy, also, funny enough, by Kate Campbell. This vaginal orgasm, achieved from intercourse only prevalent in 15 to 20% of women.
Yeah, and don't call it that because it's not. This is what Freud...
Sigmund Freud.
...was obsessed with sex. Yeah. But he said that a mature orgasm was achieved vaginally and a vaginal orgasm was a mature orgasm and clitoral orgasms were immature. And, right. You know, what a load of nonsense. So there's no such thing as a vaginal orgasm. They're all clitoral. So if you're lucky, you might have an orgasm through intercourse, but the vast majority of people don't most of the time.
And when you say they're all clitoral, it's because of what we were just talking about then, in the fact that, like, your clitoral glands, help me out here.
Well, no, your clitoral, your nerve endings.
That's, sorry,
and
yes.
The structure of the clitoris. It
is enlarged to the point where it can be stimulated indirectly through vaginal
intercourse. So the clitoral complex, when it's engorged with blood, is nearer the surface. So if you're highly aroused, it's more likely that the penis rubbing against it will result in an orgasm. Also, you can position yourself so that the shaft of the penis rubs against the clitoris. And women with a larger clitoris are, you know, more likely to have this happen. Being on top can help. Sometimes hormones can make a difference when, you know, at certain times of the month, it's easier to climax that way. And during pregnancy, because there's a lot of blood vessels and there's a lot of blood around, it's easier to climax with penis in vagina for a lot of people, but not everyone. So don't be disappointed if it doesn't apply to you.
Yeah. And so I'm guessing, does that work with sex toys as well then? Because obviously Freud was just talking about penis and vagina, but you know.
Yeah. So any stimulation of that area is going to do it. I mean, you know, the sort of a tickling come hither motion with the fingers, sex toy, whatever you want. And people will have different experiences as well. I mean, everybody is different and it's a matter of experimentation and you may find it's different at different times. But what really fascinates me is that when I started in sex therapy, there were a lot more people then saying, oh, I have anorgasmia, I cannot have an orgasm through intercourse. And that is not anorgasmia. Anorgasmia means you can't have an orgasm at all. So through intercourse, you're not expected to. And most people are aware of that now. And if you do, that's great. But there are still a lot of men who believe that's the only way their partners with a vagina will climax. And for a lot of them, that's not true. An awful lot of people fake because they want to please their partner.
Wow. There's so many things I want to touch on there. So just to rattle through them quickly, can we blame this on two things? Sigmund Freud for saying that
let's blame everything on him.
Let's blame Sigmund Freud for saying clitoral orgasm is immature and a mature one is a vaginal one. Just another thumbs up has come on the screen. Also then TV shows and films showing people have vaginal intercourse and come at the same time
they
in this amazing ecstasy. That also
that's the other thing coming at
idea.
The same time. Yeah a lot of people still even now think that if we love one another we will climax at the same time.
Yeah. And that, like you say, people coming to therapy now because of these preconceptions having that issue, such as we have a related question here from one of our listeners who put a question into our anonymous Google form, which you can find in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. We're at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok and X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Slightly late, but that's fine. They said, hi, I used to masturbate a lot in high school, but now have a girlfriend who uses SSRIs. They said SRRIs, unless I'm mistaken.
So they mean antidepressants.
Yes. And needs approx 50 minutes to orgasm. I can't do it that long. Maybe I need some sort of Viagra pills. She says she loves every moment of it and okay with that, but I feel awful every time. Male, 19, heterosexual, Turkey, Istanbul. Obviously, that question throws up a lot of things we've been talking about. But, I mean, the big thing there is takes approximately 50 minutes to orgasm. So you would say maybe a long time. And I can't do it that long. Maybe I need some sort of Viagra pills.
Yeah, it's sounding as though he's expecting her to climax through intercourse.
And, you know, is that not focusing on the wrong area? Because I've cited this 15 to 20% of women able to climax this way, but it might be less. It might be slightly more. Either way, it's a low percentage of people. And some people only climax this way once or twice in their entire lives, if at all.
Well, I have known some people who confuse stimulation of the clitoris with masturbation, so that even if their partner's doing that, they still feel that they're doing something wrong and that they ought to be able to climax with penis and vagina sex.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really difficult because it's not true, it doesn't work, it's not what was meant to happen.
Yeah, and this leads to faking orgasms. We've talked about this on the podcast before, response pressure, where you're pressured into responding in a certain way because let's say it's a straight relationship, you're having sex with a guy who maybe has watched porn and stuff as well, maybe reading some Sigmund Freud. They assume that you should be able to come through just penis and vagina sex. And so you think, oh, bloody hell, well, I've got to fake an orgasm here.
It's not even just that. I mean, it's, first of all, pressure on men to make their partners come, or pressure on everyone to make their partners come.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how you do it. From that point of view, the pressure is there because the onus is on the other person to please their partner, which is why in sex therapy, we're much more focused on people being responsible for their own pleasure and making sure that what they need happens rather than saying, I'll just lie here and wait for you to make it all happen. Because while you're just lying there, you're thinking, oh, God, his jaw's going to drop off or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's both performance pressure and response pressure going on, and people often have very little fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like you say, nearly half of all women have faked orgasms for the reason we've mentioned. There is that belief that one must orgasm or it isn't sex. Whereas many women have partnered sex, don't orgasm at all, and they're fine with that. But it is that thing of let's remove that idea that we have to make our partner's orgasm and let's take care of our own orgasm. And that will relieve the pressure on everyone. We'll make sure that we have a good time. And if they're doing the same thing, then you both have a good time and it's great.
Yeah, I mean, when you're not watching the whole time for your partner's response, I mean, let's admit it is very sexy to see your partner really turned on. Lots of people really find that wonderful. But there are an awful lot of people who don't like their sex face and will try and stay stoic, whatever. And you know, just go, that's a great sex face.
Imagine a sex face and the worst one you could see, that's the face that Mum just made.
But, you know, they're not doing anything, they're not making any noise, they're not giving anything away because it's embarrassing. They feel embarrassed by that. So that's another sort of pressure. But if you don't know what your partner's thinking or feeling, actually, eventually, you just stop worrying about it and start thinking about your own pleasure and what you're enjoying. And if you know that you can show one another and that your partner will say, please do this, can you move their hand or whatever, then you don't have to worry about it anymore because you know you're both getting what you need. It just transforms everything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm guessing then you get lots of people coming to you and saying they maybe haven't ever felt they've orgasmed or they don't orgasm very often during partnered sex or...
So it's more often during partnered sex and not necessarily penis and vagina sex, but at all. And it's all because of things like being self-conscious about your face, your noises, your whatever, and wanting to please your partner. There are some people who find it really difficult to let go. And as you know, same for men. Some people find it hard to let go. And some people just have been brought up to believe there's something wrong with sex. Or they've had sex too young in their lives, inappropriately perhaps, and now feel really bad about it or, you know, have learned to suppress pleasure. And so then you've got to unlearn all of that and start again. I mean, it's absolutely doable, but lots of people struggle on for years and years and years and years and years without having very much fun. And I mean, we've talked before as well about people using pressure that's too intense on the clitoris and using very, very sort of strong and buzzy vibrators and things that make the clitoris numb.
Yeah, which I think sometimes, you know, it's difficult. I sort of want to be really sex positive and all that sort of stuff. And I'm, you know, I want to be like, oh, I'm very pro sex toys and things. So I don't want to say necessarily that, like, you know, don't use a vibrator or whatever, but maybe you're talking about kind of what we were talking about recently, with the idiosyncratic masturbatory style that means that sometimes some people with penises take a longer time to orgasm when they're having sex because they can't replicate the same sort of thing that they're doing when they masturbate during sex with a partner. In the same way, not many people, well, I don't think anyone can replicate what a really strong vibrator would be doing when applied really firmly against the clitoris.
Yeah, or any, you know, that probably wouldn't be comfortable, but any vibrator as well. Yeah. I mean, a vibrator is not fingers or tongue or, you know, or feathers or whatever else you choose to use.
Yeah. Wow.
But if you turn on a vibrator and apply it directly to the clitoris, it can be really uncomfortable. So even if you're using that, you still want to be a bit turned on before you go. I mean, you know, there is this sort of going straight for the genitals. Probably isn't the best idea. You know, there are other areas of the body, breasts, buttocks, you know, other insides of the thighs, loads and loads. Work out where your own erogenous zones are. Mm. Breasts are very sensitive usually. Some people can't bear to have their breasts touched because they're so sensitive, but other people really enjoy it. And it's not a bad place to get to quite soon, but before you get to the genitals.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's maybe take a little break and then follow the journey of someone who, because I think lots of people think this, they, you know, either partnered or alone, they think I either take ages to orgasm or I just can't and maybe never have. So maybe we can follow the journey of that person, work out their causes, work out some solutions, and then call it a day.
Oh. Bit sad.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe, is there a way that I can phrase that to make it less sad?
Yeah, it sounds a bit jollier.
Yeah.
And then wish people luck with that journey rather than call it a day.
Okay. Work out some solutions and then maybe at the end of it, we'll all have an orgasm.
Oh, God, Dix. See you after the break, guys.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hattrick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
Welcome back to The Real Sex Education. We're going to go with this case study now, then. So I'm a young lady and I have Diggerina for today.
Diggerina.
Yes.
Nice and to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. I'm here I'm reporting for my first day of sex therapy.
Good Lord.
Also the fact that I'm reporting and that I've said hello, I'm Diggerina. I'm reporting for my first day of sex therapy. You can tell quite clearly I'm not very good in character. But
you're on parade.
I'm on parade. Again, I don't think we're doing... What world does she live in? Well, is she from, it sounds like she's from the Victorian era. Diggerina, there's a performance we're about to see. Diggerina is sat here. Let's talk about the causes. Diggerina has said that she's come to sex therapy because she's orgasmed on her own, but she can't orgasm with partners. And the context here, you've done your history taking, and the context here is she did live in a world and there was a bit of shame around sex. She was a bit worried about showing her sexuality and go on.
This sounds a bit more like anxiety, you know, being required to perform. I mean, if there's going to be shame around sex, you're less likely to have masturbated, you know. So she probably wouldn't know she could orgasm by herself. I mean, some people very cheerfully masturbate by themselves, but they might have a partner who's not very skilled. I mean, it's not about being a skilled lover. It's about couples being able to show their partner what interests them. Yes, and communicate. People can find that very difficult.
That's exactly her issue, right? Diggerina, you know, it's society and people that have told her to not do all these things, but masturbation is a way where she can do this stuff rather secretly. Maybe there's a bit of anxiety around it, but at least it's her own thing. The problem is when she gets into partnered sex... That's the problem. And that's when she feels like maybe she can't let go as much and she's not communicating with her partner. Basically, what we're talking about here is the context is important when talking about this sort of stuff. Mm. So you said at the beginning, you know, someone can just be tired. They can be distracted. In her case, maybe there's a bit of anxiety. There's a bit of guilt. There's a bit of shame around that. We talked about medication So the question that we had was the SSRIs. Mm. They can, you know, stop the likelihood of as quick an orgasm or orgasm at all in men and women.
Some people find it hard to let go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as we were saying before, some people are worried about being embarrassing about their sex face or the noises they make or whatever.
Yeah.
And some people don't like the look of their genitals, or they're self-conscious about their body for whatever reason. There are so many reasons. There are so many things that can get in the way. And being able to relax and concentrate on yourself is quite a skill. And, you know, so some people have no problems sexually until they meet somebody they really, really care about. They can have casual sex and it doesn't matter because all of those things, you know, don't bother them that much. But when it's somebody they really, really care about, they're much more worried about losing them. They're much more worried about getting it right. They want everything to be perfect. And that's when problems start. Mm. So, you know, that can happen. If you've had in the past inappropriate sex, I mean, sex too young, sex with somebody who's more powerful than you, who's taking advantage. And especially, I mean, some people feel really terrible because they did orgasm when that happened.
Yeah.
And so they've suppressed everything.
Wow.
So that can happen as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are all kinds of reasons why people won't climax. And as you say, the context is important. Sufficient stimulation is important. Being open to it is important. Not being distracted is important. There's a heck of a lot going on.
Yeah. And so I imagine with the examples of inappropriate sex, you know, with that, you would say, I think a good solution there is going to therapy and really working through that, right? With other stuff, though, would the primary solutions be firstly working on yourself? Because basically reading these cracking books by Kate Campbell, an important thing is some people, I think, and again, because of these unhelpful ideas, is that if the right person comes along who's quote unquote skilled enough, they'll just be able to make me come and brilliant. That's perfect. I'll orgasm and that's great. Whereas actually what the book suggests, and I hope you'll correct me if I'm wrong, because you know Kate Campbell, don't you? That you need to work out what makes you orgasm and then you'll know what needs to be done for that to happen in partnered sex.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
whether you do that to yourself as well during partnered sex.
Well, yeah, and no reason not to. Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of people do that and a lot of people find it very sexy. Just going back to the kind of therapy that you might, I mean, lots of sex therapists are also trauma trained. So if you can find somebody who can do both, that's really, really helpful. It's not just go and talk to somebody about what happened, because one, you don't want to re-traumatize yourself going over and over and over it. And two, just talking about it isn't going to help. You need somebody who's trauma trained. So that's quite important, because otherwise you'll think this is never going to work. This is never going to help me. Mm. And not all sex therapists are trauma trained, but increasingly they are. Some people think, I've put that all behind me because I don't think about it. And I say, whatever happened to them that was traumatic, they don't think about it. They've suppressed it. But when you're with somebody you care about and trust, particularly if whatever happened was with somebody you trusted, that's when it all comes out. So so you think it's behind you and you can have a really, really wonderful sex life with lots of different people and it's all great. And then one day it just changes. So that's important to know that.
Absolutely.
and that is normal. That's a normal response, you know, nothing to worry about, but you want to get it fixed if you want to be sexual together and enjoy that. If it's just a matter of anxiety, there are so many things you can do yourself, like getting to know your body, like getting your partner to know your body, and starting with just getting to know one another's bodies without rushing to the genitals, just relaxing and just having a nice time, being really careful about consent together and not doing anything that you're not comfortable with, and so that you haven't got anything in the back of your mind what's going to happen next or anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's distracting you. You know, there are ways to if you're close to climaxing, tipping over, like tensing and relaxing, Kegels can tip you over, you know, screaming, behaving as though you're climaxing, you know, sort of acting it out, can actually make it happen. A really good way that works for a lot of people, role play. So don't do it as yourself. Be sexual as somebody else. And also fantasizing about a different scene. preferably not with this partner. So you know you're, well, yeah, because if your partner is so important to you that they're putting you off, then you can't, then if you think about something else and imagine yourself, I don't know, you know, sexy cowgirl or something with a cowboy, then, you know, as soon as you've climaxed, you're back in the room with partner, but they'll never know. And
yeehaw.
And they'll be very pleased because you seem so turned on and it's all great.
Love that. That's class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, for some people...
Fucking Bronco.
Yeah, whatever. But for some people, their partner gets in the way. Even though they're in love with their partner, they want to make love to their partner. Yeah, they're really doing it. But they care so much, it gets in the way.
Interesting. God, some of this stuff is... It just feels like there's contradictions all over the shop. But that's the sort of beauty and the horror of it, right?
Just almost... I'm always saying almost everything is counterintuitive.
Almost
everything that works, yeah.
But, you know, and so obviously... The going away and doing that touch on your own is obviously about exploring the zones that we talked about, the erogenous zones, you know, and touching your body and then doing that with your partner, touching each other's hands, looking at each other lovingly naked, but like in a consensual manner and slowly building up to things, not just rushing to the genitals. I think in the book, it's a really nice talk about mindfulness as well and really being in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
There's a really nice... exercise in there which you can do on your own, which isn't even remotely sexual really. It's when you're in the bath, or I personally think better still, in the shower, the mindfulness of actually, we have, you know, I have a shower every day, but I don't stand there and think about how it actually feels. And standing in the shower and actually zooming in on your body and how it feels with the warm water like flowing off your head, you know, little bits splashing onto your like arms here and there, like really working out how that feels for you. And, you know, within a little while, you're really focusing on it. And you're like, fuck, this feels good. But it's weird because I do it every day and I don't think about that.
And the temperature, noticing the temperature, noticing the feeling of your hand. If it's a soapy hand, is that different from a non-soapy hand? Are you using a loofah or a flannel or something like that? What are the textures like? That kind of thing.
Yeah,
very important.
And it even goes as far as, like, you know, sometimes when I'm eating, I'm like, I need to actually remember how this tastes and how this feels in my mouth. And that sounds
absolutely
another one, you know.
That's, and so sometimes really important. I
think mindfulness for people, they think, oh, it's just some Instagram bullshit, you know, it's like, oh, be mindful everyone. But actually, I think if you train yourself and keep doing these things in totally non-sexual situations, when it comes to a sexual situation, then you can really zone in on that stuff more and it will heighten
it's
things.
Worth, I mean, some sort of breathing exercises, like a long breath in and an even longer one out. I mean, a deep breath in and a long breath out. Often you can feel your heart slowing down. You notice what's going on in your body. I mean, this freaks some people out, but it can help to relax you. I mean, most people, when they're having sex, are in their heads, not in their bodies.
Yeah.
So you've got to make that change and get into your body so that you can really notice what's going on there.
And if you can't do that with your own body, get in the cowgirl's body. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Diggerina's very happy with all this.
Good.
She's going to get her cowboy boots on. She's going to get her cowboy hat on. And she'll be screaming to make it happen. That'll be her orgasm trigger as well. She'll make it happen that way. Amazing. Well, hopefully that's been helpful for people out there. Please do subscribe to the podcast and follow us wherever you're listening to this now. We will see you then. Thank you so much again, Mum. And thank you so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.